collection of Winnie the Pooh stories. This week, Pooh encases Piglet in concrete as the council try to turn 100 Acre Wood back into Greenbelt.
The digital station on radio, TV and online. BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Hello, everyone. Just in case you've just joined us, I'll mention that we're halfway through the Comedy Club here on BBC Radio 4 Extra, with me, Tom Wrigglesworth. And on this day in 1955, ITV made its debut on the airwaves. Although, fortunately, Jeremy Kyle wasn't born for another 10 years. But, luckily for us, before both those events, the mysterious bearded woman met with Pip and Harry in Bleak Expectations.
Bleak Expectations by Mark Evans. Chapter the Second, An Adolescence Utterly Trashed.
Damnation!
Father, what is the matter?
Lily, my dear, I am vexed, peeved, irritated and thrum-diddled, which is a new word I've just invented, meaning roughly the same as vexed, peeved and irritated, but differing just enough to be worth using. It is that wretched journalist. Enter! Mr. Sarquil, you are late.
I apologise. My tardiness is because I attempted to come by horseless carriage.
One of those confounded new steam-powered devices?
That was my intention, sir. But indeed, this particular horseless carriage turned out literally to be a carriage without horses. It was 20 minutes before I realised.
Imbecile. If your idiocy spreads to all aspects of your work, I'm amazed that your account of my life in the Times has any readers at all.
Oh, but it has been enormously popular. The article has been read by nearly 12,000 people.
Is that all?
Well, that is half the population who can actually read. It is a sensation.
Well, of course it is. I am a fascinating man who has led a fascinating life and who wears fascinating underwear.
Fascinating underwear?
Made out of squirrels.
That is fascinating.
Enough about my rodent pants. Shall we continue?
Of course, Sir Philip. Allow me to find my pen. It is somewhere in my bag.
Is it a Gladstone bag?
No, this is the much more exclusive Disraeli bag. It has many, many more pockets. As the great man once said, when it comes to pockets, lay them on with a trowel. Now, is my pen in this one? Is it in this one? No. This surely is the pocket.
Oh.
Turns out, no.
Oh.
Possibly in here. Aha! Here is a pen, but not the one I'm looking for.
Oh.
This pocket surely contains my prize. Or indeed, it just contains some string and a conker.
Enough! I will take your bag and put it somewhere where the sun does not shine. Lily, take this bag and put it on a coach to Scotland.
Phew.
Bags should be like women. Simple and with one lockable opening. Now, as you know, my father had died, my mother had gone insane, and I, Pip Bin, have been sent to the most terrifying school in Britain, St. Bastard's. Lily, do not play the organ in a thunderstorm while I'm talking.
Sorry, Father.
Anyway, my story continues. Now, I had met the boy who had instantly become my best friend, Harry Biscuit. But the very next day, he was to turn 18, when, in keeping with school tradition, he was to be killed. Escape was vital.
So, Harry, got any plans?
Indeed I have, Pip-Bin. I have three plans.
Three? But that's brilliant. Let's hear them.
My first plan is for a new mode of transportation based on highly trained geese and compressed air.
Right.
My second is for trousers you wear back to front and this is the really clever bit, upside down. And my third plan is for an eating house where you dine on raw fish brought to your table by some sort of continuously moving system of belts.
I see. And How will those help us escape?
Well, I reckon any of them can make us enough money to bribe our way out of here with ease.
We're going to die.
Ah, well, that's where my fourth plan comes in, an anti-dying device.
Harry was good, honest, loyal, and in a crisis, a complete moron. To make matters worse, I was as hungry as I'd ever been. Meals at Zimbastis were only served every 3 months, and we had last eaten 11 weeks before. And although meals had been cancelled, meal times had not. 3 times a day, we had to sit and mime eating breakfast, lunch and dinner under the watchful eye of the tyrannical headmaster, Mr. Heartthrasher.
You boy, I don't believe for one instant that you're eating a chop. You must be beaten. Come here and bend over.
But help was at hand. As I finished miming my soup and prepared to move on to my main course of imaginary steak and vegetables, one of the school servants approached. They were never the finest specimens of humanity, but this crone was particularly vile. As she loomed over me, she seemed to be less a person and more a loose amalgamation of mud and warts held together by a long, hideously matted beard.
Grunge mumble. Here, have this.
Have what?
Eat it. It's a dumpling. And here's a carrot and a Venus schnitzel and a small slither of game tureen. And under the table is a chicken. It's a bit underdone. Be quick before the headmaster sees.
What? Why? Who are you?
I'm a friend. Eat your food, then meet me here tonight and I'll tell you more. Mumble, grunge, mumble.
I shared my food with Harry. We were the only well-fed boys in the school that day, apart from Bissington, who had eaten his own arm, and Frobisher, who had eaten Bissington. After lunch, I was summoned to the headmaster's office where I had a visitor, my guardian. Mr. Gently Benevolent.
Young Pip, you look well, by which I mean not yet dead.
Mr. Benevolent, how glad I am to see you. This school is intolerably cruel, and my sister Pippa is at a nunnery next door, and she is to be Joan of Arc on Joan of Arc Day tomorrow, and they are going to burn her.
Such insolence! You dare to accuse me of cruelty? You shall be beaten to within an inch of your life. Possibly slightly closer. Now, bend over.
No, headmaster, that... Let us not beat him, not when I bring such good news.
I am to leave this school. That is a relief, because the curriculum is incredibly limited and the pastoral care is virtually non-existent.
Indeed, no. I am to marry your mother.
What?
Then I shall not only have all your money, but also your family's good name and social standing. Are you not delighted?
But when is this to happen?
Tomorrow. I would invite you, but I'm not going to. However, I do have a treat for you so that you may share in the celebrations. The headmaster has agreed that you may have an actual meal at the same time as the wedding.
But what meal?
Why, this special delicious soup.
It says poison on it.
No, it says poisson. Just spelled a bit wrong.
It is French fish soup.
If you're prepared to believe that, then yes. Now, run along, Pip. Or should I say, son?
No, never.
Enjoy your soup. Now, headmaster, would you be kind enough to give me a good thrashing?
Of course. Bend over.
Oh, that is bracing.
It's not as much fun if you enjoy it.
I had to save my mother. My only hope was the servant who had claimed to be a friend. Harry and I waited for our chance to sneak out and meet her. It came around midnight. Nesterton was crying because he was homesick, so the headmaster came in and beat him. The beating made Nesterton cry again, so the headmaster beat him again. And Nesterton still wouldn't stop, so the headmaster took him out to shoot him. In the confusion, Harry and I crept to the dining hall.
Hello? Is there anyone here?
Shh! Keep your voice down!
Who are you?
Just a friend. And who's this you've brought with you?
He too is a friend.
Then we're all friends.
Do you have a name, mysterious bearded crone woman?
There are those who have called me Bearded Brander. Others have called me Hairy Harriet. Others have called me Goateed Gretel or Mustachioed Margaret. But to you, I'm just a friend.
Why did you feed me?
I've been sent here to help you.
By whom?
A friend. I'm just a friend sent by a friend to help a friend. Oh, and Shaving Sharon, that's another one they call me.
How do I know I can trust you?
Maybe this will convince you.
My mother's locket. Who gave this to you? Was it my mother? Is she well again?
As to your mother, she's quite mad.
But that is marvellous news. She was totally mad the last time I saw her. So only quite mad is a real improvement.
No, I mean quite as in completely, not as in a bit.
Oh. And my sister, are you to help her as well?
I am, but I warn you, to take both of you away from here will not be easy. Indeed, there are those who say it will be difficult.
And Harry, I'm not leaving without Harry.
Three of you? That makes the people who say it will be difficult look like blind optimists. There are people who would say that getting three of you out of here is impossible. And those are people who are generally quite positive, you know, real glass and half full type people. Well, that's how hard it'll be.
But can it be done?
We shall see.
We followed her out of the dining hall and into the kitchen, where she opened a cupboard and walked in. We followed her, dodging imaginary hams as we went, and found at the back there was a secret passage.
Where are we going?
To fetch your sister from her nunnery prison. First, though, we need to disguise you. There's nothing so out of place in a nunnery as two young men. Except maybe three young men, or four. Oddly, five seems completely normal.
You mentioned disguises.
Here, put these on.
In the dank corridor, we quickly dressed.
Are you sure these disguises won't raise any suspicions in a nunnery?
No! What is a more normal sight in a nunnery than a giant rabbit and the late Admiral Nelson?
Almost anything.
Now, before us stands a secret door to the nunnery. I only hope the lock still works. It hasn't been used in 20 years.
Harry?
Sorry. I always make that noise when I'm nervous. Feel free to try the door now.
Thank you. Now, follow me and just act like any normal rabbit or late naval hero.
Splice the main brace, raise the topsail.
Keep calm. Someone coming.
Haul anchor and make way. Good evening, sister.
Good evening, Admiral Nelson. How nice to see you alive again. And good evening to you, Mr. Rabbit.
I don't believe it. It's actually working.
Now, your sister should be through this door here.
Sorry, nervous again. Do try the door.
Inside, in a large tin bath, was my beloved sister Pippa. Relief washed over me like hot custard over a delicious pie. Sweet, welcoming, and oddly yellow.
Pippa!
Pip! My brother Pip! How happy I am to see you!
If you're as glad to see me as I am glad to see you, then you must be exactly as glad as I am.
Glad? Oh, I am glad. So very, very glad. So very, very, very glad.
Do not be sad, Pippa.
I am not sad. I am glad. These are tears of gladness, not sadness.
I am so happy.
But you sound so sad.
No, not sad. Glad.
It is hard for me to tell the difference in your weeping.
Oh, well, it is quite simple. These are tears of gladness. And these are tears of sadness. They're quite, quite different.
Of course.
So how are we to escape?
I do not know. That makes you happy?
No, this is sadness.
Oh, do not cry, Sister Mine, for we shall escape.
Oh, Pip! This is gladness, by the way.
Heartened to find her still alive, yet baffled by her emotional fluidity, I introduced her to the mysterious servant woman.
Pleased to meet you, young Pippa.
The pleasure is all mine, hideous bearded crone.
And to Harry, who I think was quite taken with her.
Pleased to meet you, Miss Bin.
It's
Sorry, bit nervous. Don't get to talk to girls much.
Enough of this idle banter. We must get you out of that bath and escape.
Bath? But this is no bath.
Then what is it?
As you know, I am to be burned as Joan of Arc this afternoon.
Yes.
And like your school, my nunnery only has a meal every 3 months.
Yes.
So this is not bath water. It is a marinade.
No. My own sister destined to be eaten.
But not anymore. Not now you have come to rescue me.
Mmm, rosemary, garlic and olive oil. You'd have been a tasty feast, Miss Bin.
Thank you, Harry Biscuit.
I feel funny.
You arrived in the nick of time. Sister Cookswell is shortly to come and squeeze lemon juice over me and stud me with peppercorns.
Then we must leave at once.
Not without my anvil.
Before he died, our father had given Pippa an anvil, which she used to make tiny shoes for all the animals of this world.
Something so heavy will slow us down.
But it is the only reminder I have of father.
Surely you have a lighter reminder.
Well, there is this one-page letter he gave me, or this feather, or this paper bag full of his breath. But it's the anvil that really reminds me of him.
Oh, very well, you may bring it. But first, we must disguise you.
Once more, from beneath her voluminous skirts, the mysterious servant produced a disguise.
Right, let us leave. And remember, just behave like any normal dead admiral, giant rabbit and grandfather clerk.
Trafalgar, bloody good battle, apart from being killed.
Bong, 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 sister.
And good evening to you as well, Miss Clock. Nice anvil, by the way.
Just a bit further.
Against all hope, we had almost made it. But suddenly, a voice rang out which chilled me to my very marrow. I forget why I was carrying such a large vegetable. Part of the rabbit disguise, perhaps.
You four, stop exactly where you are and bend over.
Quick, everybody, this way.
We followed her down a steep staircase into a huge cavern. There was a bitter taste to the air, which Harry and I knew all too well.
The school salt mines.
One of the many, many punishments at St. Bastard's was to be sent to the salt mines, where boys went mad with thirst, or to the neighbouring pepper mines, where they often sneezed themselves inside out.
This will slow the headmaster down. He will not dare come in here without reinforcements, and they will take him some time to gather.
First Brigade, take the left. Second, the right. The rest, follow me down the middle.
Damn! I forgot about the salt mine hussars. Run for it!
The salt is making me hallucinate. I keep thinking I can see a giant rabbit.
I'm dressed as a giant rabbit.
Oh, now there's two of them.
Hurry! They're gaining on us.
It's no good. I can't keep up. Leave me.
Perhaps if you stop hopping like a rabbit.
Oh, yes. Good idea.
I am going to weep now. And for your information, this will very much be a weeping of a forlorn and anguished nature.
No. I have a plan. We must smash through this wall to the neighboring pepper mine.
But what good will that do?
You'll see. Now take these shovels and dig. Dig!
We dug as if our lives depended on it, which they did. The hussars came closer and closer. We dug harder and harder. And then...
We're through!
The pepper's coming in, mixing with the salt.
Then get down, everyone!
In those days, science wasn't as advanced as it is now. Everyone knew of people who had inexplicably exploded at mealtimes. But we did not yet know of the deadly explosive force unleashed when salt is mixed with pepper. In our ignorance, we blamed such deaths on acts of God or flammable cutlets. But this servant knew exactly what she was doing.
Achoo! Oh, damn this pepper! Achoo! Why won't it stand still and bend over?
Is everyone all right?
I think so.
I am.
Harry? Harry Biscuit?
My arm! My arm's come off! I've lost an arm!
Harry, you're dressed as Nelson.
Of course!
Here it is, tucked into my jacket.
Ah, I've lost an eye!
You're dressed as Nelson.
Of course. Here it is under this eye patch. It's all right. I'm fine, everyone. Did I have a third leg? No.
The scene around us was one of utter devastation. No one survived, apart from us. And then...
What have you done to my school? Bend over! Bend over, damn you!
He still lives.
Bend over!
No, he doesn't. Your anvil has saved us, Pepper.
In the explosion, the anvil had been blown high into the air and had landed straight on the headmaster's head.
Come, children, we must leave.
The roof of the mine had collapsed, and we crawled out onto some sunlit moorland where we breakfasted on some freshly exploded and heavily seasoned grass.
Well, now that's over, I can remove these vile garments.
As she peeled away the layers of clothing, warts, grime, and oddly thinly sliced cheese, she started to look strangely familiar.
But it cannot be.
Mother, is that you?
No, just a friend. Or should I say, an aunt.
Aunt?
I'm your mother's identical twin sister. Your Aunt Lily.
We have no Aunt Lily.
Is she maybe my Aunt Lily?
You have an Aunt Lily?
No.
I've kept my existence a secret up till now, partly because of my work for the Imperial Secret Service, but mostly because I can't stand family functions.
That's all fascinating, newfound Aunt Lily, but now we must go to our home to rescue our mother, for Mr. Benevolent is to marry her this very afternoon.
Should I wear a hat?
No, Harry. This is no ordinary wedding. It is an evil wedding.
Over here, I have four of the fastest horses in Great Britain. They will take us there. Giddy up! Come on! Yeah!
Perhaps we should have got on them first.
Do not worry. I have attached four strong ropes from the horses to your ankles. In just a minute...
It was painful, but it was quick, and we soon reached our home.
Ah, home. In the nunnery at night, often did I dream of returning here. Although more often I dreamt of strong men in tight breeches lifting me bodily onto a stallion.
It is your home no more, I'm afraid.
Is it maybe my home?
No, Harry. It's Pip and Pippa's. But it has become an asylum, and those are the inmates.
Of course, in these modern times of 1873, the politically correct term is lunatics. But in those days, we called them what they were. Mentalists, nut jobs, lady minds, soft heads and der brains. And our home was full of them.
I can't believe it. Mentalists and nut jobs everywhere.
And lady minds and soft heads.
Not to mention the der brains.
A carriage, quick, into the ditch.
We watched from our hiding place as it drew to a halt. Then a set of steps unfolded and a familiar foot emerged. That familiar foot was attached to a lower leg I knew well. And in turn, that well-known leg connected with a thigh I had seen many times before, which itself led up to a body which I oddly didn't recognize at all. The neck, head, and face were all, however, only too prominent in my memory. For they belonged to...
Mr. Gently Benevolent.
But why is he naked?
Fetch me my clothes.
We watched as a man approached Mr. Benevolent, and this man, too, seemed oddly familiar.
Mr. Gently Benevolent, to what do I owe this pleasure?
Dr. Hardthrasher, I bring news. Your brother is dead.
Which one?
Jeremiah.
How?
Like a steak in a bad restaurant, over-seasoned and cooked to a crisp. And with an anvil for a head.
Ah, steak d'anvil. My favourite. Well, it is of no surprise to me. Jeremiah had a reputation as a hard man, but in truth he was a weakling with a milksop's heart, a fool's head and the ears of a thin kitten. Now, what can I do for you?
I have come to take Agnes Bin with me to be married.
Hearing this, I could not restrain myself and leapt out of the ditch.
Mother!
Did you just see an enormous rabbit?
Well, there's plenty of them around. They're attracted by the mentalists. Anyway, I shall have Agnes been fetched for you.
This time, at the mention of our mother, it was my sister who could not restrain herself.
Mother!
Where did that clock come from?
I meant bong, 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 bong.
Ah, 4 o'clock already. Time for roll call. Line up the loons.
With the recent ending of the wars against France, there were certain obsessions shared by the Durbains of Great Britain.
Napoleon!
Here.
Napoleon!
Here.
Napoleon!
Here.
Napoleon!
Here.
And finally, Wellington.
Here?
What, here?
My nemesis!
Get him!
And then, through the melee of torn limbs and thwarted imperial ambition, I saw a figure silhouetted against the sky. My mother. As the battle raged around her, she was still noble, beautiful. She was also being led by a burly henchman towards Mr. Benevolent's carriage.
Put her inside, henchman, and I shall take her to be married at St. Reluctance Church, some miles away. And Dr. Hearthrasher, I want you to shut everyone inside the house, lock all the doors and windows, and burn the place down.
Why?
Well, it'd be a bit of a laugh, wouldn't it?
Splendid. And if anyone asks, I'll just say I was trying to burn the madness out of them.
We must do something.
It is too dangerous. You have more to live for than you know. I did not want to show you this so soon, but perhaps now is the time.
Reaching into a bag, Aunt Lily pulled out a newspaper. It was the London Gazette, dated just a week before, and on it was a painting of the docks at Portsmouth.
Look closely.
We squinted hard at the picture, and there, in the bottom corner, bound and chained, sat a figure with a familiar face.
Father!
He is alive!
We must find him, and we must rescue Mother.
And we should probably stop the mentalists, nutjobs, softheads, ladyminds, and durbrains from being burnt.
As we watched, Mr. Benevolent climbed into his carriage and departed with my mother. And meanwhile, Dr. Hearthrasher prepared to burn the asylum. We faced a terrible dilemma. Did we save my mother or the innocent Durbrains?
What an awful situation to be in. What did you do? I bet you saved the lunatics. No, your mother. Did you save her first? No, don't tell me. Actually, do tell me.
No, that is enough for today.
Our readers will lap it up like a bowl of lovely gin.
Then return. Return next week, and you shall hear more.
Of course. Goodbye, Sir Philip, and goodbye, Lady Lily.
Goodbye. So, Father, how do you feel?
Like an elephant has just got up from sitting on me. It is a great relief, but I am badly bruised and everything smells a bit funny.
And is there much more to tell?
Oh, indeed there is. When he returns, he shall hear how we saved both the mentalists and my mother. But lost something far, far greater.
Bleak Expectations was written by Mark Evans and starred Richard Johnson as Sir Philip Bin, Tom Allen as Young Pip, Anthony Head as Mr. Malevolent, Jeffrey Whitehead as Mr. Hearthrasher, Celia Imrie as Aunt Lily, Susie Kane as Pippa, Sarah Hadland as Lily, and James Barkman as Harry Biscuit. Wellington was played by Mark Evans. It was produced by Gareth Edwards.
And Sourquill will learn how they got out of that situation in next week's episode of Bleak Expectations. Sue Townsend was the biggest selling author of the 1980s, and on Saturday, here on BBC Radio 4 Extra, she talked to John Tidyman, the man who brought her creation to the airwaves, in Adrian Mole, The Mole Truth, with Sue Townsend.
After the first book, well, it was a terrific success. It really made an extraordinary stir at the time. And I remember your having said, oh dear, it's been published by Methuen. And you said, those nice people at Methuen, they're going to lose an awful lot of money, you know, because the first print is 7,000 books and they're never going to sell them. Well, of course, they sold like hot cakes and it went into first edition, second edition. You couldn't buy the books. They couldn't print them fast enough. And it was one of those extraordinary publishing stories, and it really took off, and I think that part of the takeoff actually was because the nation had heard it first on radio. And that had created a lot of anticipation for the book which subsequently came out. But the second book, which in fact follows on...
Yes, from the Growing Pains, Secret Life.
The Growing Pains begins in April 82. That's after your birthday, which is April the 2nd.
Coincidentally, it's the same as Mole's.
Isn't that funny, isn't it?
It is.
That's how you remember Mole's birthday, I expect. So he's still sort of, in certain respects, he's sort of prematurely old, isn't he?
I think Mole is one of those people that born middle-aged, in a sense. He can't wait to get into a button-up cardigan. In fact, he asks for a cardigan when he's 13 and three quarters for Christmas, and his mother is disgusted with that request.
He doesn't exactly smoke a pipe, though.
He keeps his room tidy.
Metaphorically, he smokes a pipe. But
metaphorically, he's always smoked a pipe.
He never approved of smoking, ever.
He hated smoking, unlike me.
Unlike the author.
He loves it.
As well as being able to catch the original diaries on weekday afternoons, you can hear Adrian Mole, The Mole Truth, with Sue Townsend on Saturday at 9 in the morning and again at 7 in the evening.
When chief whips say they want an urgent word, they usually mean they've got the photographs under lock and key.
Drama in the corridors of power.
Unfortunately, the news of the world has the negatives.
Francis Urquhart comes to BBC Radio 4 Extra.
You could teach Machiavelli a trick.
The acclaimed political thriller by Michael Dobbs about one man's ruthless ambition.
Someone out there who will stop at nothing to fix the election of the man who will shortly be our Prime Minister.
House of Cards.
What have I done to you? I've ruined you. I've destroyed you.
Begins on Monday afternoon at 1 and again in the evening at 8. BBC Radio 4 Extra.
So here we are, folks. We've come a long way since, well, 10 o'clock, and it's time now for our last programme. Green weapons come under fire in Mark Thomas, The Manifesto.
John is in a basement mixing up the medicine. I'm on a pavement thinking about the government.
Good evening, I'm Mark Thomas, and welcome to The Manifesto. This is the show where the studio audience have sent in their policy suggestions to me on how to improve the world or at least their lives. And tonight we examine and discuss those ideas and then put them to a vote to select a policy to enter our manifesto. Now, Radio 4 listeners have a reputation as being independent, considered and mindful. And having read some of the suggestions tonight, I have to say that might not always be the case. I've got a few suggestions here that we've had handed in to us. This certainly, I don't think this is a Radio 4 listener. This one is from Rebecca. Every morning, everywhere, every person must say, I love myself, 5 times out loud. Then spin around 5 times and say, I love everyone else too. That's not a Radio 4 listener, is it? That's more of your heart FM. That's not really... Then Eva said, philosophy classes starting at primary level to develop thinking. That's a Radio 4 listener. Minimum walking speed limit in public places. That is a Radio 4 listener, isn't it? Now, I've been doing this show sort of around the countryside. I've been touring it around. You can see where public opinion is going through the policies. A few months ago, bankers. Everything was about bankers. It was in Bath, one of the policies, hang a banker every day of the year. Bath, and it was the precision that got me. The banker, every day, is it Monday? Yes. 9 o'clock, yes. Where's the banker? He's not hung. And then it said, and compulsory allotments for everyone. Fantastically British is that? Your absolute barbarity and gardening. But then it moved on to politicians with a vengeance. And it was just all the stuff that was just... one policy that was voted through at Leicester was that MPs' houses that had received public money should be open to the public. And so, because we've paid for it, we should be able to enjoy it. And while I've been touring around, we have been running an unofficial open day policy. And actually, it was great. We played croquet on Julie Kirkbride's lawn the other day. So, let me go to some of the ones that we've had. Get Barack Obama to record himself as a sat-nav voice. this was also a lovely one here. This was to reintroduce witches' hats. Who put that one? Did you notice the person put that one over here? Simon, talk us through. Could you tell us what a witch's hat is?
It was a ride on a children's playground, shaped pretty much like a cone, about 12 feet high. You could probably get 40 kids on it. It rotates like a roundabout, but it also swings backwards and forwards in many different planes. It's lethal.
Let's just be clear about this. This was banned.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was banned because...
Every playground, some kid would try and stop the witch's hat swinging backwards and forwards with 12 of his friends on it with his teeth.
So, but you've said, I would like to bring back the witch's hat.
I'd like to bring back the witch's
you
hat.
You want the reintroduction of dangerous toys. You want to hurt children.
No, I don't want to hurt children. I want to let children get hurt. I think...
No. That's like saying, I did place the landmine, but I didn't make the person step on it.
I think if you've got a big sign that says, danger minefield, maybe that's appropriate. Children's playgrounds.